This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by ABSFAM, ABSFAM.com. They're awesome. You're awesome. Get together and make more awesome. www.ABSFAM.com. All right, so this is another cool in-between-isode. We sit down with AJ Haefeli, who is going to give us a story from the press box, a new thing we're kind of doing right now. And he's going to talk about Michel Goulet and some of the things that he has learned from being in the press box. And then we break into hockey talk, random, authentic hockey talk about many things, including the player's safety, commission, group, comedy troupe, whatever they are. And then also just some thoughts on the Avs, goalies, players, coaches, and everything Avs. So without any further ado, here is AJ Haefeli talking about Michel Goulet.
So basically, first game of the season, and it's my first regular season game up in the press box. So I'm kind of nervous. And the preseason basically featured only like one or two local guys that I was already familiar with. I'd introduced myself. I'd seen him at practice, training camp, so on and so forth. Well, regular season is totally different because it's filled with a bunch of personnel from out of town. You got beat reporters from the opposing team city, blah, 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 blah. Well, it also features a number of NHL scouts. And while they've been there at the preseason games, the number of them in the regular season games goes up to about 8 to 10 per game, as opposed to 3 to 4 who were there during the preseason. And number one scout who was there, who's there actually every game, he's a scout for the Calgary Flames now, is Michel Goulet. And, you know, Michel Goulet is one of the like big pimps in Quebec, Colorado franchise history. You know, he's one of the big point leaders in the franchise's history and one of the most prolific players to ever play for the combined franchise. And so it's interesting that he lives here now, and he's still friends with all the old French Canadian guys that came over from Quebec. Some of the guys who still work for the team. He knows everybody and it comes to all the Avalanche games, but he's a Calgary Flames employee, which I find kind of interesting, but whatever. And opening night, the Avs are playing Jerome Iginla, and I was looking through my media packet, and included in there had a little tidbit of upcoming records, like a page full of players on the Avalanche who are approaching either franchise records, personal records, or all-time records. And obviously Jerome Iginla was on that list a number of times. One of the things that he was moving up on, one of the lists he was moving up on, was all-time power play goals. And he was one goal at the start of the night. He was one goal behind Michel Goulet. And I thought that was kind of interesting because Michel Goulet was sitting, 3 feet to my left. And I was like, okay, well, that's neat. Kind of cool. We'll see if he scores one. And, anybody that remembers the fun part of opening night remembers the Avalanche got that first power play, and they got off to that hot start and they scored that first goal. And sure enough, it was Jerome Iginla on the power play. And it took me a couple of minutes for it to like process what had just happened. Cause I was like, oh, and so I kind of started tweeting about it, running the account and doing everything. It was really exciting. Oh, beating the Wild and Minnesota, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, all of a sudden I was like, I get it now. Like, oh, he just tied Michel Goulet's place on the all-time list, which is like 26 or something. Like it's not like a really high up there, like top 10 or anything, but it's still notable. And so I kind of tapped the guy next to me, I tapped him on the arm, and I was like, Michel Goulet's record just got tied by Jerome Iginla. And I show him the packet, and I was like, oh, and he just scored. And so we wait until the first intermission, and we're like, we slide over there and we're like, hey, Michel, he just tied your record. And everybody kind of starts laughing about it. And we're giving him kind of a hard time. Oh, this is just how you know that you're getting old, is when guys are out there breaking your records while you're still at the games and blah, 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 blah. It's just giving him a hard time. Dude is like ice in his veins, doesn't react. And he's just like waves everybody off. Leave me alone. I have work to do. And he just goes back to watching his tablet, which was awesome because he's always watching another hockey game on that tablet. So, and it's almost always the Flames game. If they're playing on that same night, he's almost always watching Calgary play. So it was pretty funny. And then what was it? Maybe the Dallas game, game two. I don't 100% remember when, again, Le passed him on the list, but the same thing happened, except he was much more receptive to it because it was, he's no longer tied. He's like, okay, now everybody can leave me alone. Everybody had a good old laugh about it. And it was interesting to watch, like, a lot of these old time scouts who have been working with each other, you know, and that fraternity, that tiny brotherhood that is the professional hockey world. And all these guys, you know, some of whom had insignificant professional careers or no professional career at all, to see a guy who was once a superstar at, like, Michel Goulet, you know, a guy who played in the NHL from the time he was 19 until his 30s. You know, it was funny because they're giving this guy a hard time, and it was like all the generations kind of coming together. And he was totally, you know, he shrugs everybody off. He's, oh, this is nothing. And then when Ginla passes him on the all-time power play goal list, which is like, I mean, is that, I can't even believe that's actually a list. It's so like, okay, cool. What day of the week was it, you know? But it was just funny to watch all these different guys come together from all these different worlds and give this guy shit, you know, universally respected. And that actually kind of was like the start of my working relationship with him. You know, now I sit next to him almost every game, and we chat about the games and the players and all that. But it was just interesting to kind of see how that whole thing started. You know, with Jerome Iginla and passing him on the list. And it's, you know, from a personal standpoint, it's interesting for me to see, you know, it's for me to wonder, you know, where, what my relationship with him would be like. I mean, probably non-existent without that having taken place and me having noticed it at the time and kind of alerting everybody around us to it at the time. And it was, you know, it was fun. It was interesting. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my, you know, how I got started in the press box with the people around me and you know, Michel Goulet getting passed on the all-time power play goal list by Iginla.
So that's such a cool story. Nobody else can tell that story, basically, or maybe some other people can, but that's pretty elite, man. You have a cool gig. I dig it. So do me a favor, though. You told me once a story about, I'll see if you can remember this or not. Nick Holden was taking a lot of heat. I know, shocker. For pinching in on a play, and you were up in the press box with somebody who was trying to explain to you, or who was, maybe you already knew, but was telling you about how it's not so much Nick Holden on that, it's the guys around him that set him up to fail on that. Is that the same? Did you get that from Michel Goulet?
No.
Can you say who that was?
It was, I don't actually remember his name. He was a scout for the Vancouver Canucks. Whoever that guy is, he shows up every so often. I can't for the life of me remember his damn name.
So I don't know why that one stuck with me so much, but it just kind of, like, to me, it sort of spoke to this idea that there's hockey knowledge beyond just the typical fan knowledge, obviously, right? But then people who think they know hockey too, but there's guys who can look at it and they detect these patterns that, you know, we don't. We get so focused in on one player and what he did against the boards and that puck went right by him and what was he doing? When these other guys, it's like they have vision of the entire ice while it's going on, yet they can still process these small details. And that was one of the ones too that you were telling me about that I've tried to articulate in a podcast before, and it probably sounded just like this, me rambling, but I thought that was super awesome too.
Yeah, no, it was that was kind of an eye-opening moment for me too, just because, like, when I have enough time, you know, given the opportunity to watch a play once or twice, I can usually pull up the same conclusions. But to watch that watch him as he did it immediately right then and there, you know, as he sees it once and he sees not even so much the players on the ice. He just sees them as like chess pieces moving around a board all the time. And he just sees them the way that they are. Like it was interesting, you know, the people that get paid and the things that they watch for and kind of kind of the comprehensive way that they look at what's being done on the ice. It's fascinating. Like I'm really excited for them to come back into town so I can go back to covering games and all that, because I'm just being up there with them.
It's probably one of the coolest places you can be, short of, you know, being right behind the bench, maybe seven rows up, so that, you know, you're not right on the glass, you're high enough to see the whole game, but you can hear the bench and the coach. And that's my favorite spot to be at. And I've only been there a couple times. My second favorite is probably, I was in the clear channel box once when Patrick Waugh got his 300th win, actually. That was fantastic.
Sounds awesome.
Do you know who Denny Dent is? I might have told you about this already, but Denny Dent is this painter who paints with his hands, and they call it an art attack. So they're kind of using the metaphor of a heart attack. But this guy, he seriously puts on like Jimi Hendrix music, and he freaks out and dips his hands in some paint buckets and throws them around. And pretty soon there's this amazing painting that he did right in front of you. And sometimes he even does them upside down, so it looks all confusing. And then at the very end, he turns it around 180 degrees, and it totally looks like Patrick Waugh or Jimi Hendrix or whoever he was painting that night. So that was probably my second favorite place to be, and one of my better experiences, too. I didn't realize at the time how profound Waugh would be as a player, a coach, and just kind of the history of Colorado hockey, but that was really cool.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
It is. And then I saw Dick Dale play. I don't know if you know who that is or not, but it's the Avalanche kind of 60s surfboard song.
Nope.
That they come out to a lot of times. So I saw that, and that's really it. I don't make it to a lot of games.
Why not, man? You got to come out.
I should get like a press pass and pretend I know what the fuck I'm talking about. No, I'm kidding.
That's all I do every day.
You're good at it though, right? And you're more balanced than me. I'm always like, Avs are going to win. This is the one. We turned it around. This is the new season. And then every game, I'm like, God damn it. I spend 2 days sulking, waiting for the next game.
I'm paid to be, but you know, at the same time, like with the increasing negativity, like starting to flow from everyone, like today, for example, you know, I tweeted out, oh, hey, you know, everybody excited for the Avs beatdown of the Jets tonight. And the majority of the responses that I've gotten are, don't you mean beatdown from the Jets or by the Jets? They're not going to beat the Jets down. Yuck, 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 yuck. And I'm like, man, your negativity is only matched by your clever wit, sir.
Oh, well stated there, actually. That sounds like something I would say, but I agree completely, man. It's just, I don't know. I mean, be a fan, right? You have the right to gripe. You have the right to piss and moan, but for me, I also have the right to mute you or just not pay attention to, you know, I get tired of it. I mean, I get beat down like other people too, man. There's some games where afterwards I catch myself being a little bit short with people or in a pissy mood about it, but I get over it too. And I don't know, man, I think the team's going to have a good future. And I think that we're just waiting on that to get started.
Same. I mean, I feel very positive about the team. I mean, we're looking at some of the numbers, you know, over the last 10, you know, first 10 games versus the last 10 games, and all of the underlying numbers have not just come up, but they've come way up.
Yeah, and hopefully Waugh doesn't die before it's over. He looks like he's about to croak right now. He looks like he's taking the term as the president, and he's graying, and he's getting thin, and he quit cutting his hair, and man, I hope
that. Oh, yeah. The dude just looks more and more tired every time I see him. Like, I just got done watching his presser from today, and I liked that he, you know, he looked a little more lively than normal. He looked a little fired up, like he was ready to get to it.
He's probably ready to go home, man. He spent his career on the road, basically. So I don't know. Maybe that's home for him. Maybe he likes being on the bus or the plane or with the team and the coaches and all that. But if it were me, man, this is a long road trip. I'd be ready to go home, see my dog, eat some food in my couch, you know.
It's abnormally long because normally on these types of road trips, the team will come home for like a quick day or two. And they didn't have an opportunity. The only opportunity that they had to come home was after Montreal before Toronto. And you're not going to fly from Montreal to Denver to Toronto all within a 24-hour time span just for the sake of going home for a day. Like, it's really like, I think we're all going to be able to look back and kind of remember this road trip because it is so out of character for teams to have these kinds of lengthy road trips, not just in terms of the number of games, but they had no back-to-backs and they had 2 days off in between one of their games. They have been on the road since November 9th, and they don't get home until probably after midnight tonight.
Right. I mean, that's a long trip. And if you come out of that above 500, it's probably a success, right?
But honestly, even if they finish this thing 3-4, I'm going to be pleased enough with it. Like, it's like, okay, not happy that they win 3 wins, 4 losses, but at the same time, it's like, look, that's a really daunting task for any team. And then I think you're going to see a really, really fired up Avalanche team on Wednesday, no matter what happens tonight. I think their first home game, they're going to come out flying.
I hope so. And if there wasn't this added pressure of, you know, we've screwed up so much of the season as far as points go, and, you know, everything is so important all of a sudden, then I think it wouldn't even be such a big deal. If we were walking into this with a winning record right now and we went 3-4, people would be going, that's not bad. I mean, that was a rough road trip, and we caught Washington when they were absolutely at the top of their game, excited about records and OV and all that. And man, we got blown out of that building. But I think that, you know, it's progress. It's just, it's hard to see it when it's not dominant. People see black and white. They don't see the gray area turning into the saturation of a good game.
Yeah, no, it's true, man. They just, it's tough. The hard part is that the eastern portion of Colorado's schedule is basically over. You know, like within the next week or so, they will be pretty much done on the East Coast for the entire season, which sucks because they're so far behind in the standings already. Like, that's the easiest portion of their schedule, but it's great in that all the teams that they're chasing, they will be playing every night. So instead of you know, playing Washington and hoping for the best against a team that's probably going to come out of the Eastern Conference for the Cup Finals this year, in my eyes anyway, you know, they're going to be playing, they're 2 points behind Calgary. Well, cool. They're playing Calgary tonight. You know, they can take those points. You know, every game turns into a 4-point game for them. So that's the upside of how the schedule has fallen and kind of where they are, is that if all these positive steps that they've taken, and, you know, with the return of Varlamov, if they do start turning all that and translating them into wins consistently, they're going to be a real terror, because they're going to be playing all teams that are in the Western Conference and the Central Division, especially. Like, the whole month of December is like a Central Division soiree. Like, they go to town. They play a bunch of Central games starting really tonight. You know, they got Winnipeg tonight, and then they have Winnipeg again this weekend. And then they go on their little Eastern trip next week, and then they have Minnesota twice in a row. And then they go Nashville, St. Louis, Chicago, and then they have a couple of games break, and then they have Chicago again. So all the teams in front of them, they're going to start playing, and it's going to be interesting to see if all the positive steps they've taken in terms of process versus results over the last week or two, see how they kind of stack up, and if they continue, and if they start to translate into wins. Because if they do, they're going to be a handful for a lot of teams.
Right. I mean, I hope we're not just playing the role of spoiler, but even if that's it, I think that, you know, we're playing the long game. We got a couple of years before we're just consistent every night dominant. And I think that we can get back to that. We may not be Forsberg, Sakic, Tanguay dominant, but good, really good. We have some guys who the ceiling's high. I mean, MacKinnon, honestly, he kind of broke through what I thought he would be for the first 3 to 5 years of his career. And he's added some new things to his game. So there's a lot of potential. It's just a matter of being consistent. We got to not be so bipolar when it comes to our game.
Yeah, well, that's – the big things, the goaltending has to come back to normal, because it's been boom or bust so far, with a lot of bust, ladies. And they have to not have those – like that – they gave up 3 goals in Pittsburgh in a 2-minute and 8-second span. They have to avoid that. They cannot have that happen anymore.
And so
that is a no-go.
That was the Boschman incident, right? Where there was a phantom penalty.
Yes.
Am I in the right game?
Yep.
I think I am. So, I mean, you have to overcome that as a team, right? That shit's going to happen. You're going to get the bad calls and things like that. You can't just implode when that happens, even if it's only for a couple of minutes, and then, you know, fight and crawl your way back. But for me, that'll be one of the signs that we are coming together as that team who's more consistent, who has not just the depth player and skill wise, but that depth, emotional energy, and coolness on the ice and stuff. I think that we got rattled when that happened, and I think we paid for it in a big way, and that was the game.
Yeah, absolutely. The it's been a growing concern for me, but the on ice leadership is kind of a, you know, who's going to step up in those moments when those things are going poorly. You know, Patrick Waugh can only call one timeout, and he's shown an increased reticence to do so this season because of the coach's challenge.
Right.
And the way that it ties into the timeout, and it's resulting in coaches not calling timeouts during games for the reasons of calling timeouts, because they have to save it for a coach's challenge. in case, you know, a game-changing goal happens.
And by this point, too, players know that as soon as you get to that TV timeout, don't mess around. Don't be diddling and dadly. That's, you know, that's when you go talk to the bench, and that's kind of like a timeout. And I think that you see more players just getting over there knowing it's time to game plan and guzzle some water really quick. So it's not as important as it used to be. But that's one of the rules where I'm not sure how I feel about it. And honestly, as much as I love to watch the 3-on-3, it does become a little bit of a pond hockey game, and you wonder how fair it is. And the same thing with the shootout and all that. Now they're talking about making goalie pads smaller and the goal bigger, and nobody is saying anything like, hey, why don't we get rid of that trapezoid, which sounds like a great idea to me. Let's let the goalie play the puck again. But there's so many little things like that where it's tough because you want to be traditional with the sport and how all that goes. But there is a different game on the ice right now than there used to be.
Yeah. I mean, we just have to – you just – the really – the rules and regulations just have to fit the modern times. You know, the whole tradition of the sport and blah, blah, blah. The game is nowhere near the same on the ice as it was 30 years ago. And so I have a problem with the whole, you know, upholding tradition of hockey. Like, if they wanted to make the whole sport 3-on-3, I'd have a real problem with that because it's a 5-on-5 sport. Like, that's a fundamental change in the game. I don't feel like changing the size of the goaltender pads, but just having stricter enforcement of the rules that are already in place, because it's why are there, I mean, there are goaltenders who are 5'11", you know, 6 feet tall, who have the same pads, or wearing the same pads as a guy, you know, like Pecorine or Reto Berra, you know, like big guys here. You know, Pecorine is 6'5".
No, is that without Berra, skate?
What's that?
Like, without skates, he's 6'5"?
Yes.
So he's like 6'8", probably, then, or something close to it, then when he's all geared up.
So he's enormous. And then you have smaller goaltenders, guys who are 6 feet tall, you know, 5'11", 6'1", wearing same size pads as that guy. Like, I'm sorry, but you have to enforce these rules that are in place about these things. You can't just do that. You can't just let that be.
You know what pisses me off even more than that, though, is, man, the player safety thing is just so inconsistent right now. It's like, I get that they want to crack down, but I'm not on board with the way that they're like just kind of randomly doing this and that. It almost seems like it's based on a player's popularity instead of their track history or, you know, what's been going on that way. And maybe that's just me being pissed about some calls we had against us or some suspensions and all that, but it just seems super inconsistent right now. And it undermines the trust of the fans in the game and the way that it's, you know, played and policed, I think.
Well, it really does, because I mean, you're talking about, you know, Landeskog gets suspended, and I have no problem with his suspension if that's how they're going to call it. Like, if that's what it's going to be, that's what it's going to be. Cool with me, homie. It's whatever. But I mean, when you're talking about, you know, Jonathan Toews does almost an identical thing. What was it? A day, 2 days later. And there's no suspension. There's nothing. He got nothing out of that. Nothing meaningful anyway. It's like, what are you guys looking at? What are you seeing? Especially when in the Landeskog explanation video, they gave all the reasons why it shouldn't have been a suspension. You know, oh, the primary point of contact was shoulder to shoulder, even though the head eventually did take contact. Yes, it did absorb some of the hit. Primary point of contact has always been the emphasis in these cases, and all of a sudden it wasn't anymore. It was, oh, well, he hit the guy in the head. And it wasn't interference. It wasn't late. It wasn't dirty. It wasn't any of the things that it could have been. That they gave Landeskog full credit. He held up a little bit. He could have done much worse. He could have done this. He could have done that. It was all theoretical. And then they were like, we're suspending him for 2 games. And then you see over the next 5 days, 2 hits almost identical to the Landeskog's, both of them go unpunished. And it's just like, what the hell? It's, you know, normally like, don't have those problems. Like, I don't feel like there's an avalanche bias. I feel like there's an avalanche media bias in certain markets, namely Toronto. Mm-hmm. I feel like the NHL doesn't have any kind of a bias. You know, I don't feel like the NHL is out to get the Avalanche. But when you see, you know, Tyson Barrie's suspension, I thought was fair. You know, he jumped into a guy who didn't have the puck, fucking hit him in the head, and he hurt him. 3 games for a first-time offender, a little heavy on, you know, it's a little heavy-handed. But I always prefer for Department of Player Safety to go a little longer than a little shorter, you know, really, like, truly just punish a guy. You know, if you really, if there's an egregious hit, like, really make the statement, punish the dude.
I think when that one came down, though, we all thought right away, like, oh, okay, that seems a bit heavy, but, you know, this is what they're doing. They're cracking down and they're going to get on that. But then we saw them just be inconsistent from there. And absolutely, that's where you start to call bullshit. You're like, wait a minute, this isn't fair at all.
Yeah. Like, I, you know what? I'm cool with the Tyson Berry one. You know, probably should have been two games instead of three. But at that point, you're really splitting hairs right there. Like, really. So, whatever, you know. The ones that they gave the Avalanche, in my mind, whatever, that's fine. But the ones that they're not giving to other guys across, now it's starting to turn into a thing across the league, is starting to get frustrating, you know. And it's, I just wish there was, and you hear this word every time when you talk about the DOPS, is consistency, because if there is none, there's never been any. You know, and I knew, you know, you had to expect that, you know, with Pronger taking over this year and Shanahan leaving, that there was going to be a little bit of an adjustment period in how the rulings were handed down. And, you know, it was going to kind of be a little bit in the eye of the new beholder kind of thing. But so far, it's like, dude, this is frustrating more than it is rewarding. Like, you're doing more damage than you're helping, because – you know, now both Tyson Berry and Gabriel Landeskog are in the, you know, they're no longer first time offenders.
It's on their track record, right?
Right. They become repeat offenders anytime anything ever happens. And it's like Tyson Berry, you know, Tyson Berry has probably like six hits on the season, maybe. Like,
I'd say half of those were accidental too. Somebody just got it from me, you know. I don't know. I think that it's crap, and I hope they get that put together. And it's easy to bitch about it when you have a losing team. Maybe if we're winning, we'd be like, yeah, whatever. But I don't know, man. I think that the league has to get that under control, and I think they need to take a look at just kind of how players are playing the game now, too, because I see these guys who it almost seems like they're turning into the boards to try to get the call when they're about to get hit, or, you know, they kind of put themselves in what looks like a really horrible situation, or they feel a little bump on their back end 6 feet from the wall and they dive nose first into it. And maybe it's not happening, but for me, I see it on the ice, and it's something I might do if I was playing the game trying to get a call. And it, you know, it was me being different, but it kind of pisses me off because it seems like guys are putting themselves in bad situations knowing they might get a call, which could get a power play and could help them win the game, something like that. Yeah, I think we had a mini podcast there. I don't know what happened. We went from recording a thing to just talking hockey.
It happens, man. I could talk hockey with people all day, so.
As could I, AJ Hafley. Really awesome of him to get on the phone and talk hockey with us. It's a really cool story from the press box. We intend to have more of those because there is an insight and there is a knowledge base up there that you don't get anywhere else. And AJ is cool enough to share that with us, and we're going to bring that to you. Thank you to everyone who has gotten back to us to tell us what you do and don't like. Some of you like these better. Some of you like more produced pieces better. And we like you for all of it. As always, this show is brought to you by ABSFAM, ABSFAM.com. So we have a lot of hoodies right now, and they're all really awesome. You should definitely check them out. But if I have to be honest right now, my favorite is the Dutchie, because it is so comfortable on the inside. And I like the pullovers this time of year. I don't want a zipper. I want to have that pullover. I want to put a big hoodie on my head, and I want to have 1,000 warm hugs on the inside, which is the case. Check them out, www.ABSFAM.com. Happy holidays. Be nice to each other and stay awesome.